Hello everyone, my name's Nick Scott. I'm an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and I'd like to welcome you to this podcast, which is one in a series of five focusing on getting used to change. The Institute of Leadership and Management recognises great leadership as being multidimensional, and we have identified five dimensions: authenticity, vision, ownership, achievement, and collaboration, which we've broken down into a further 49 components. These components help us to organise our content, but also help individuals access the leadership support that is most immediately relevant to them. The component I'll be talking about today is leading projects. This falls within the dimension of collaboration, as we believe that collaborative leaders build great project teams. The Association for Project Management defines a project as a unique, transient endeavour, undertaken to achieve planned objectives which could be defined in terms of outputs, outcomes, or benefits. They go on. A project is usually deemed to be a success if it achieves the objectives according to their acceptance criteria, within an agreed timescale and budget. If we unpick some of these terms, we can get a greater insight into some of the key characteristics of a project. Firstly, unique. This means it's a one-off individual endeavour. It's not business as usual, but a specific defined thing. Transient means it's not going to be around forever. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and we will know when it's over. Planned objectives. This means that it has specific known outcomes which we have identified in advance, and there will be a plan to achieve these. Success refers to us knowing if we've done what we set out to do. Success actually has three strands. Firstly, is it as good as we would like it to be? Does it meet our specification criteria? This is sometimes referred to as scope. Secondly, were we on time? Was it achieved or completed by the deadline we had set ourselves? And finally, was the project wrapped up within the pre-agreed and specified budget? These three competing strands, quality, time, and budget, form what is sometimes referred to as the triple constraint, and they're generally seen as being in tension with each other. Clearly, they're interlinked. If a project is overrunning in terms of time, then allocating more resources can get tasks finished more quickly, but that's likely to raise the budget. If you're facing a limited budget and it looks like overrun, then perhaps some non-essential components may have to be scrapped. Strictly, success is where we meet all three pre-agreed constraints, but there are plenty of examples with some sort of failure. Crossrail is around 3 years behind schedule and £5 billion over initial estimate. The Scottish Parliament came in 10 times over initial budget, and an NHS patient administration system was abandoned as not fit for purpose, despite £10 billion having been spent. In attempting to get a better handle on possible time overruns, one tool developed to reflect this direction of travel is known as the waterfall technique. This breaks any project down into 4 consecutive, pretty much self-explanatory phases. Initiate, where we come up with the initial idea and some notion of time frame and cost. Plan, where we provide as much specific detail as we can on what we intend to deliver, what will be done by when, how much each element will cost, and how we will know if we've met our success criteria. The third stage is execute, where we actually carry out the plan and create the deliverables. And then finally, close. Here, we end the project and hand over to the client or customer the final product or processes. In recent times, alternative approaches have been developed, generally referred to as agile. Derived principally from an IT background, these favour a more iterative approach where you seek ongoing feedback from end users as to quality standards and fitness for purpose of what's already been achieved to date, and then revisit those stages which fall short of end user requirements. However, the original concept of a timeline, literally start at the furthest point left and travel rightwards into the future, was behind most of the techniques of analysis developed during the last century. The one which most people will be familiar with is the Gantt chart. Here, the project is broken down into component parts, called tasks, stages, or activities, and these are graphed with time on the bottom axis, and with each separate activity shown above, each as a rectangle of time with the size of the block reflecting the duration of the task, and with the earliest shown at the top left of the chart and the last at the bottom right, effectively revealing the full duration of the project. Importantly, the Gantt chart also shows which tasks are consecutive and which are concurrent. This is a key concept in technical project management. Many activities can run in parallel, while some cannot start until something else is finished. We can't paint the windows until they've been fitted into the new building, but we can send somebody off to choose the paint while the carpenters are still unpacking their tools. These basic ideas: can we break down the project into discrete elements or tasks? Can we estimate how long each task will take and how much it will cost? And which tasks are prerequisites, in other words, need to be completed before another can start, formed the basis of the scientific approach which came to dominate the technical side of project management during much of the last century. And this is still evident in software tools to assist in project management and leadership today, such as Microsoft Project, which can help estimate overall cost and duration and permit us to target additional resources if we need to speed things up due to some unforeseen event. These technical skills, however, tell only half the story, as in recent times, we've turned more to considering the role that people play and reflecting on the people skills required and not merely focusing solely on time, money and scheduling. When the government of the 1980s started outsourcing what had, up until then, been public sector work to the more commercially focused private sector, their default assumption was that profit-driven enterprise would do a better job than bureaucratic state structures and civil servants. However, there were a significant number of large-scale failures of IT and other infrastructure projects, which upon investigation were blamed on a number of reasons ranging from badly defined objectives, inadequate quality control, poor cost estimation, and lax project governance. So the state took a more hands-on approach to quality control. They took an existing tool for structured management and tweaked it to help create PRINCE2, Projects in a Controlled Environment. Initially in-house, this became a de facto standard for the UK in the 1990s, and there are now close to 1 million certified individuals in the UK who've had some form of formalised PRINCE2 training. PRINCE2 has the benefits of applying a standard methodology to a wide range of projects. People who've been trained in the structure and tools of PRINCE2 can talk to people they've never met using the same template and language, along with some other standard features. Key concepts are that there are certain recurring themes, irrespective of the sector, complexity or scale of the project, such as how we deal with unforeseen events, who has specific responsibilities and the like. Similarly, there are a set of standard principles which should guide our design and operation. These include a clear financial justification for the project, and do we know all of the stakeholders, and how should each be updated? Ultimately, taking the themes and principles together, we establish a standardized sequence of stages in a predefined set of processes, such as establishing overall direction, managing each stage, and knowing when we're moving from one stage to the next. Ultimately, this helps us see the key range of responsibilities for the project leader and the skills which they need to possess. They need content-specific knowledge to understand the scope of the project. They need good attention to detail and the ability to plan well, an understanding of the resources being deployed on a project, and the associated cost implications. They should have a good grasp of what quality means and the end-user requirements. And newly, to the scheme, an appreciation of risk and uncertainty. So they are leaders, they are planners, they are problem solvers, communicators, motivators, and increasingly, conflict managers, deploying a range of new skills, the stakeholder matrix, the responsibility matrix, the risk profile. I hope this brief introduction to some of the key concepts around leading and managing projects has given you some insight into the range of aspects. There's a lot, but you don't really need to know it all. As long as you can delegate and work with a team, collaborate with people, you can lead and manage projects successfully.